bringing you an in-depth look at Penn State sports and more. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. The Steve Jones Show is presented by Sunbury Motor Company, Purdy Insurance, Brewers Outlet, and NIL Game Changers. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Happy Thursday, everybody. Welcome to the show. Great to have you with us. Here on News Radio 1070 WKOK, the opening half hour is brought to you by our great friends at NIL Game Changers. The ultimate destination for name, image, and likeness opportunities for both athletes and businesses. Visit NILGameChangers.org to start your journey. And of course, we're here in the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. And online at SunburyMotors.com. And great to be on board with you today. Tim Kirchen on Major League Baseball coming up here in the opening half hour. We're going to have Dennis Dodd on the show today talking about where we are with college football and all the developments that have been going on there. And everybody continues to follow on a daily basis what is going on with the ACC, because Florida State wants out. They're in court. Clemson's indicated they want out. North Carolina's looking around saying, okay, what's going on here? And you have two courtrooms, one in North Carolina and one in Florida, and that's where these rulings are coming from. Now, you would think that the Florida courtroom in Leon County is going to benefit Florida State, and you're going to think that the courtroom in, I think, Charlotte, North Carolina, is going to benefit the ACC. The question is going to be, in the end, how does it play out? Is there going to be a fee that has to be charged? Where does grant of rights figure in all this? And how much money is each side willing to spend to get their point across in a courtroom? And then, say they do get free. Say they do get free. When are they free? And where are they going to go? And it brings up interesting questions, because there's only two places that are worth going to: the SEC and the Big Ten. And the question then has to come up, how big, in terms of the structure that you have with your schools, how big is too big? Right? You have to be able to have an organization that you can then work with, where you can make everything fall into place. The Big Ten's at 18, and they've fought hard to get a structure schedule-wise that works. I'd like to see how it works first before they expand. All right, Tim Kirchen, Major League Baseball, next half hour on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
The best get-togethers start with a trip to the beverage supermarket, Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street, Sunbury. Why? Because Brewers Outlet has not only a great selection of beer, including imports and microbrews, but also a lot more. Brewers Outlet has water, soda, they roast their peanuts every day, and you can't forget about stopping by the pickle bar. Look for great deals on wine coolers and all your favorite snacks. Before you enjoy those special times with family and friends, make your visit first to the beverage supermarket, Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street, Sunbury.
You want your young athlete to get the most out of life and NIL. You need a roadmap, a strategic approach. NIL Game Changers help student athletes earn while they learn in their collegiate journey. Driven by former student athletes and coaches who work as NIL sports agents and content media designers, they'll guide both student and family, starting with high school students looking toward college and those already in college. Get a seasoned team of marketing experts with a background in athletics and coaching. Visit NILGameChangers.org, the ultimate destination for name, image, and likeness opportunities.
Welcome back. This half hour brought to you by NIL Game Changers, the ultimate destination for name, image, and likeness opportunities for both athletes and businesses. Visit NILGameChangers.org to begin your journey today. And joining us now in the Sunbury Motors studio on the line, the great Tim Kirchen from ESPN. First of all, Tim, how are you? Great to have you with us.
My pleasure, Steve. How are you?
Doing very well. Excellent article, by the way, on Jackson Holliday, it's amazing. You know, you talk about his comfort level in the clubhouse. And, you know, the first person I thought of was Patrick Mahomes, who grew up around being in clubhouses, and everybody will tell you it translates in Kansas City. How does it translate for him because of his dad, Matt?
Yeah, it's translated beautifully. Now, look, Steve, as you know, he's off to a terrible start.
Right.
1-25. But that has nothing to do with him being uncomfortable or overmatched. It's just this is how hard it is to play in the major leagues these days. But he's going to come out of this because he's a remarkably mature, poised kid. And growing up with a major league father and a grandfather who was a coach, there is no doubt this kid's going to be a star someday. It's just going to take a little bit of time, as it always does. You know, I saw him when he was 5 years old, and Matt Holliday brought him up to me on the field one day and said, Jackson, show Mr. Kirkchen how you can do Ichiro's batting stance. And a five-year-old could do a perfect imitation of Ichiro at plate. This is what really, you know, kids who have grown up around the game can do. I mean, Eduardo Perez, Tony Perez's son, has told me dozens of stories like this. Ken Griffey Jr., Barry Bonds, they had advantages getting once they got to pro ball because they knew what it was like through their father. So Jackson Holliday is going to be fine, and so are the Orioles.
Well, for goodness sakes, when Luis Aparicio, a veteran and a great player, had gone from the White Sox to the Red Sox, he went for an 0-41 batting slump. Really? I mean, it happens. It's like, come on.
Right, and that's Hall of Famer Luis Aparicio, and this is why I love baseball. Yeah. One of the many reasons I love it so much is it is so, so difficult to play. When LeBron James has a bad game, he scores 15 points, gets 7 rebounds, and 4 assists. That's a bad game. A big leaguer has a bad game, he goes 0-4 and strikes out 4 times.
Right, exactly. People have been asking about pitchers, and circumstances happen, but there have been a number of injuries along the way to start the season. They've talked about the pitch clock. What are your thoughts between pitch clock, but also the fact that they're all throwing so hard?
Yes, to me, that's the difference, Steve. The velocity now is and uncharted waters. It's unbelievable. The industry has convinced our players, our pitchers, that the only way you're going to get to the big leagues and then stay in the big leagues is to throw as hard as you can on every single pitch. And eventually, that just wears your arm down. Also, with our secondary pitches, all of our off-speed stuff, all we think about as an industry is what is the spin rate? How violent is the pitch? And in order to get to that spin rate or that velocity, you have to be max effort every single time out. And there's only so much abuse that the arm can take. But our pitchers are conditioned at a very early age. If you don't strike out a batter per inning, if you don't miss bats, you're not only going to not get to the big leagues, you're never going to stay once you get there. So now they're all in this mindset. I have to throw as hard as I can, spin it as fast as I could, and strike you out. Otherwise, I'm not a major leaguer. And that's something that we simply have to change, that philosophy, that atmosphere. And I think it's got to start in Little League Baseball, where we're going to start to tell kids, look, it's okay to get the guy out on a weak ground or on the first pitch. There's nothing wrong with that.
Right, exactly right. Now, there's the other side of it. Paul Skeens has thrown in 9 games, and he's about 20 innings, and he's complaining about workload. In other words, he's not throwing enough. Now, I can tell you firsthand, when the Pirates were here in State College and, of course, broadcasting their games, their philosophy was really to monitor pitch count. But how interesting was it to hear Skeens talk about his workload and how he wants more?
Yeah, Paul Skeens is the rare kid. This is why he was the number one overall pick. He used to tell his manager, I'm going 9 innings today, and that's it. I'm not coming out. And it didn't always happen, but that was his mindset. But he's only pitching once a week. But this is what happens, Steve, as you know, when we get to pro ball. And their hearts are in the right place. You know, we don't want to overwork these guys because we might get them hurt. Well, they're getting hurt no matter what. Some people work better by throwing more. That doesn't mean they have to throw as hard or spin it quite as fast, But regular work works. I mean, Warren Spahn is the most durable pitcher ever. He used to throw batting practice in between starts routinely, and occasionally would pitch an inning in relief in between his starts. Maddox and Glavine threw on the side between every start. The more they threw, the stronger they got, the better they got, the healthier they got. Well, we've gotten away from that, and it's at least time to go back now and start to examine our most durable pitchers and how they did this.
We know Oakland's going to eventually, the A's are going to end up in Las Vegas. What did you think of the West Sacramento move?
Well, it's discouraging to say the least. I've spent a lot of days in Oakland. That is a good baseball town, especially when the team is good. And the team isn't as bad right now as people thought they would be. But this is not healthy for baseball that they drew 45,000 people for their first homestand. Yeah. It is not healthy that Oakland has not done the right job, and the owner there, John Fisher, has not done the job to keep the team there. So now we're going to have this very difficult, cumbersome situation where a team's going to have to move to Sacramento, which is a minor league ballpark, in order just to find a place to play until Las Vegas is ready. Now, that's assuming, of course, Las Vegas truly is indeed ready someday. There's no guarantee of that. I still think the A's are going to end up in Las Vegas, but until I see a shovel in the ground building a new stadium, I'm not going to be 100% certain of that.
Well, we know at the State College Ballpark here, I can say firsthand, that they're redoing a lot of things here to meet Major League standards because they want to get back to full-season affiliated baseball. Now, part of it is you have to have two batting cages. That's what Major League Baseball tells them. Sacramento has one. I mean, that's the thing. They're not even meeting the minor league standard right now. I thought that was interesting.
Yeah, well, I've covered a bunch of games, Steve, overseas, Puerto Rico, places like that. And believe me, the Major League Players Association will not allow a major league game to be played on any sort of substandard field. I'm not suggesting there's anything wrong in Sacramento, but things are going to be rebuilt, just like Bowman Stadium was rebuilt in Williamsport in order to make it major league ready, because the union's not going to let their athletes get hurt on a field that's not major league quality. So something's going to be done to upgrade to make sure the A's, if they're playing in Sacramento, are playing in the right place. That means another batting cage or whatever else is needed. But it just shouldn't have come to this, and I hope somehow a better solution is, you know, is found out.
Well, we love baseball because we think it's fun. So to this point of the season, what storylines to you have been fun?
Well, I think a lot of these teams that weren't supposed to be good have been really good. The Guardians were not supposed to be very good, and Stephen Vogt, their manager, has really turned them into a very interesting team so far. And they're a better offensive team than I thought they would be, and their pitching has been good even without Shane Bieber. In the same division, the Royals are much better than I thought they would be, and I know it's very early and things can turn, but that's fun when a team that hasn't played well, lost 106 games last year, has pitched as well as they have, swung the bats as well. That's a good story. The Pirates are a good story, given where they've been, and they have Paul Skeens on the way. The Brewers, having lost a bunch of players, weren't supposed to be particularly good, and they have been. This is why baseball is so great. It's so unpredictable. And just when you think, all right, these teams are in trouble, they come out of the gate flying. Both Central's divisions have been pretty good, and we didn't see that coming at the beginning of the year.
No, it's exactly right. You've got five teams, 500 or better in the National League Central, and in the American League Central, you got Detroit, Kansas City, and Cleveland there. You're right, and the Guardians have scored 102 runs to this point in the season. The Yankees and Dodgers were expected to play at or near the top most of the year. Right now they're both at the top. What's been your thought process on how they've been able to get out of the game?
Yeah, I'm really impressed with what the Yankees done, but not surprised, because Juan Soto, I had a pretty good feeling, would change the offensive approach on that team, and he has. I think they're going to score 200 runs more than they did last year, and he's going to be the biggest reason why, and not just because he's going to produce, which he has spectacularly so far, but he's going to show everyone on their team that this is what a great at-bat looks like, and it happens every time he steps in the batter's box. His approach, single to left field, take a walk, pull a ball when needed. He's so good at that that even the Aaron Judges of the world are going to look at him and say, wow. Aaron Boone told me, I knew this guy was great. I didn't know he was this great until he saw him in spring training. So once the Yankees get Gerrit Cole back, and there's a real question when that's going to happen, I think they're going to be a real dangerous team in the American League because Soto has changed the offense, and they've pitched awfully well. As for the Dodgers, no surprise, the top four in that order I think has a chance to be, if you go by OPS, the best first four hitters ever to bat in a major league order in the history of baseball. That's where I think we're going with Betts, Freeman, Ohtani, and Will Smith. Now, their pitching is pretty banged up, but it's going to get healthy. Kershaw, Buehler, Dustin May, Gonsolin, they're all going to come back at some point this year. The Dodgers are good now. They're going to get better later when the reinforcements arrive.
It's interesting you mentioned about Soto and approach. I mean, you and I watched, you know, you watched it in person. I watched it sometimes in person, but mostly on TV. That's how the Red Sox and Yankees played in the early 2000s. Long, extended at-bats, smart, getting base runners, getting guys out of the game in the fifth inning. And that's how Juan Soto plays.
Yeah, he's really, really good at that. And you're right. Those Red Sox-Yankee games was all about pitch selection, making the pitcher work. That's what Soto's so good at. And he's not trying to hit the ball out of the ballpark every single at bat.
So I'll close out with the Orioles because that's where we started. It's one thing to go out and produce 101 wins with a young team. The question is, okay, can you come back and start over and do it again? What are some of the positive signs that Oriole fans should see to this point that they are still on that same kind of track?
Well, first off, Corbin Burns has been great, yep. Which is no surprise because he's one of the best pitchers in the game, and he's exactly what they needed, an ace at the top of the rotation. They're going to score a ton of runs. You know, Gunnar Henderson finished 7th or 8th in the MVP balloting last year. He looks like an MVP candidate to win the thing this year with the way he has come out. This is a really good offensive team, but they're going to have to figure out how to get through without Felix Bautista, their closer. But they've done well out of the bullpen. They've done well out of the rotation. They got to get Kyle Bradish back. He's got a shoulder injury. He could be back in a couple of weeks, which would be a huge boost. So there's nothing not to like about the Orioles right now.
Tim, thanks so much. Appreciate it. I know it's a busy work day for you, and I thank you for the time you gave us today.
Okay, my pleasure, Steve. Thank you. Bye.
The great Tim Kirchen joining us on the show today, talking about Major League Baseball and everything going on. Baseball actually is off to a really good start, and I like what I'm seeing for the most part. We can talk about the strikeouts and so forth, like we talked about with Bob Nightingale yesterday, but the game does have a feel to it because the pitch clock does make it feel and gives you the perception that it moves. I was at a Pirates-Red Sox game a couple weeks ago and felt like the game moved. All right. Great to have you with us this half hour, brought to you by our good friends at NIL Game Changers. Go to NILGameChangers.org. Audrey Snyder looks back at the Olympic wrestling trials next on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
There's something to be said about a sale with a handshake. A service technician who really knows what he's doing. They can explain it in English what the problem is. There's nothing better than having that friend you could trust in the area. That's Sunbury Motors, where you get selection, knowledgeable salespeople, and prices that fit your budget, and more important, that friend you can trust. Welcome to Sunbury Motors, Kia, Ford, and Hyundai. You could shop other dealers and compare prices, but at Sunbury Motors, you get their lowest price promise. They research the current used vehicle market and guarantee their used car prices are the lowest. If you find a lower price, Sunbury Motors will beat it. Three dealers all in one. See their full new and pre-owned inventory at sunburymotors.com. Pick out a vehicle you like and schedule your test drive online. Follow them on Facebook. Sunbury Motors Ford and Hyundai, North 4th Street, Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf.
Hi, this is Season. For over 100 years, the Purdy Insurance Agency has been protecting families and businesses of the greater Susquehanna Valley and beyond. With the experience of our trained and knowledgeable staff, you can rest assured that your needs will be evaluated and met by some of the industry's best representatives. No matter what your insurance needs are, call Purdy Insurance today at 570-286-5855 visit our website at purdyinsurance.com or check us out on Facebook to see what we can do for you.
Bringing you an in-depth look at Penn State sports and more. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. The Steve Jones Show is presented by NIL Game Changers, Sunbury Motor Company, Purdy Insurance, and Brewers Outlet. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome back. Great to have you with us on this Thursday and this half hour being brought to you by our great friends at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. Imports, domestics, microbrews, the best selection of beer anywhere. Wine coolers, water, soft drinks, snacks. Six great flavors of slushies. They roast their peanuts fresh and hot every day. And the pickle bar, led by my two personal favorites, the barrels and the dills, indeed second to none. And it's all at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. And we're in the Sunbury Motors studio, Sunbury Motors 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. Somebody sits out there and looks at Twitter, but every once in a while one will come across my desk and it has some meaning to it. And that is former Red Sox and Phillies reliever Jonathan Papelbon, who tweeted, "Absolutely no question about it. Bryce Harper has become the player our league needs, and he knows it and cherishes it. Some may not believe this, but I pull harder for him than any other player." Bryce Harper embodies, and I've said this before, he embodies what sports should be. He plays all out all the time and understands that the paying public wants to see you play all out all the time. Even if Harper goes 0 for 3, he'll sprint down to first. Even if Harper goes 0 for 3, he'll dive to the stands to get a ball. Fans feel like when they're watching him, they're getting a maximum effort out of him, which is when you pay the money people are paying these days, I don't care whether you're paying your cable bill or you're paying for tickets and parking, you want to see people give it everything they have every second they're out there and not take a single play off. Bryce Harper doesn't take any plays off. Just doesn't. I think we also just described the sport of wrestling. You don't feel like when they're out there for whatever minutes they happen to be out there, seven max, that they don't take a single rep off ever, whether it's in the wrestling room or whether it happens to be out on the mat in front of thousands. We just had the U.S. Olympic wrestling trials here at Penn State, and we're still waiting for a couple parts to fall into place. But it was an incredible scene, and Audrey Snyder was a part of that scene from The Athletic the entire weekend. Audrey, always a pleasure. Great to have you back.
It was great. I mean, I think, Steve, like, you know, we talked so many times about how do you make Beaver Stadium, how do you make State College a destination for more than, you know, a handful of weekends per year for the fall. And this was definitely one of those events, you know, I mean, the town was busy starting Thursday. You know, hotels were pricey. People were going downtown. So I think, you know, from the local economy aspect, it was great. And then I think from the spectator aspect, the sporting aspect, it was tremendous. I mean, the high stakes moments with Olympic sports, like that's what draws me back time and time again. I had a chance to cover the Olympics in 2012, and it, I mean, there's just nothing like it. I mean, it's all of the pure raw emotion that comes out after a match, especially like that was on display all weekend. And obviously with between Penn State and the Nittany Lion Wrestling Club, I mean, this was a Penn State showcase during a massive national event.
And certainly Penn State showed out well in it. What was the reaction of the crowd when Aaron Brooks beat David Taylor?
You know, Steve, it was really interesting because I kept looking around the mat to see, like, where's Cale Sanderson? What does he do? Because, like, man, you talk about a tough emotional spot for him. Like, these are both your guys. And I didn't see Cale around the mat. And I was asking around trying to figure out, like, how did he watch this? Where did he watch it? And the crowd reaction to me was interesting because I would not say that they were stunned, because obviously everybody here knows that Aaron Brooks is incredible, but there was still that moment of, I would kind of describe it just as sadness of, you know, here's David Taylor at 33, and you have to start to wonder, is this maybe his last opportunity, his last crack at it? He was gutted. I mean, and the two shared that moment on the mat afterward, and I asked Aaron Brooks about that, you know, after the match, and he said that he just wanted to tell him that he loves him and that he, you know, he respects him and they train together. But, yeah, it was a weird crowd moment because, you know, as many people were excited about, like, okay, yeah, it's Aaron, it's also like, man, David Taylor's your guy too. And I think even watching, like, I was watching Carter Storace watch the match, and you could even tell for him, it's like, yeah, Aaron's his guy, but these guys all respect David Taylor like crazy. And, like, there wasn't this crazy outpouring of support for either guy because I think everybody was just so torn on it.
Cale's had great wrestlers, but I almost feel like the first real Penn State star, I know he won twice, he didn't win four, was David Taylor. You know, the magic man, the whole thing. And to see this happen, and what's interesting is that you talk about David's age. For the most part, and tell me if I'm wrong about this, for the most part, Olympic wrestling is a little older man's sport. And that's what made this even more interesting, to see the younger guy beat, quote, one of the older hands.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, I think the turnaround from the collegiate season to this is pretty crazy, right? I mean, you're talking 3.5 weeks from NCAAs to this. So physically, one of the things that I was kind of looking for going into the weekend was, okay, like, how does Aaron Brooks look just because of the quick turnaround, you know? And to me, it was David Taylor that looked more gassed as opposed to the young guy. Yeah. And that I thought was kind of interesting. And then I did think, too, for a fleeting moment, it's like, okay, wow, this is actually going to happen. Aaron Brooks is going to win. And in my head, I'm thinking, man, like, is this going to be it for David Taylor? Like, for a second there, I was like, could he call it quits here and leave his shoes on the mat, you know? And that did not happen, but it certainly, the thought crossed my mind. And I think David's impact here, too, is going to, you know, kind of, he didn't want to talk on Thursday about what his future looks like and whether that's MMA, whether that's maybe some level of coaching. I mean, he's got a lot going on at his M2 training center, and he's heavily involved with a lot of guys there, including future Penn State wrestlers. But yeah, it was interesting to see that it was a young man's weight class, because that's kind of not what I expected it to be. But then you got the opposite of that with Kyle Dake and Jason Knowles too. So it was a wild weekend, Steve.
Okay, but then there's Jason Knowles, right? And then there's that situation. Take us through that, because the crowd reaction to that was also interesting and also brought with it some criticism from outside people.
You know, and I think the thing with that, right, is like Jason Knowles, Penn State guy through and through, Kyle Dake, Cornell guy through and through, but because he's with the Nittany Lion Wrestling Club, you get some of that, where people are saying, hey, he's kind of like our guy, you know?
Yeah, right.
Now, I think the thing with Kyle was just, you know, how he even got on the mat, you know, after his father had passed away about a week and a half ago, the emotions of that, I mean, that came pouring out afterward in the mixed zone when he met with reporters. And he, you know, said, like, this is the first time he's ever had to wrestle without his dad, and just kind of the challenges of the emotions that come with that. But I will tell you, Steve, I mean, Jason Knowles, when he walked off the mat, it was one of the most emotional moments of the weekend. I mean, he was in tears, sobbing. Like, I thought for a second it was almost like Bo Nickel almost had to, like, carry him out.
Right.
Just because it's, like, everything you put into this cycle, which in this case was only a 3-year cycle because of the Olympics being in 2021. But just the grind of that, I think everybody, you know, people respect that. They understand that. But, yeah, that was just one of those really, really heavy emotional moments. But, yeah, and then, you know, you have Kyle Dake, who's, you know, also in tears because of everything that he's had to go through in his family. So, man, Steve, there's nothing like this event, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, and then there's Jordan Burroughs. The Jordan Burroughs situation where that brought with it interesting emotions and not the best of them.
Yeah, right. So to me, it's like, you know, obviously Penn State fans are very clued into Jordan Burroughs after his comments at NCAAs and with Carter Sturacci and how he would attack the knee and basically him verbalizing what everyone else was thinking, right? And yeah, so Burroughs was getting booed pretty heavily all weekend. I will say I don't think the crowd response was the best, particularly there was one fan after Burroughs lost Friday night, one fan right by the railing where all the athletes have to walk through to exit, just screaming at him, telling him that he's old, he's washed up, all that kind of stuff, and Burroughs is chirping back at him. Now, I mean, this very well could have, probably was, Jordan Burroughs' last match.
Sure.
And for what he's meant to the sport, like, I hated to see that. I mean, I was in London in 2012 when he won gold, and, you know, it was kind of the huge storyline then. But the crowd was really, really on him. Now, Burroughs and his coaches did not do anything to help the situation either. I mean, they were chirping back. So,
sure.
Yeah, that was just like this wild sideshow to the whole thing.
It was a wild sideshow to it. But I'll say this for about Jordan Burroughs. He represented, he has represented this country with distinction internationally, and he's won internationally. I think he deserves a little more respect than that.
Yeah, to me that was a very not great moment. And then you have the other level too of Bo Nickel's been really critical of Jordan Burroughs, and of course Nickel was in Jason Nolf's corner during the match. But afterward, I mean, there was a classy moment between the wrestlers where, you know, just the obligatory match ends. Burroughs goes over, shakes Bo Nickel's hand. Like, there was nothing there. I mean, I know Bo said he's not going to, they're not going to be friendly, this and that. But there was that mutual respect there. But, yeah, the crowd, I will say, whoever the guy was who was yelling, I don't know if it was his wife or girlfriend, whoever was with him, then laid into him. And I was like, okay, so we're trying to restore some order around here.
Right. Eventually, were you able to catch up with Cale Sanderson just about in general about all this or not?
No, he was not available, and I think part of it is kind of reading tea leaves. I think Cale wants this to be about the wrestlers and not about him, and I think it's just very much like, yes, even though these are or were his guys, he still kind of doesn't want it to be about him, which I think is just his whole kind of persona. So no, we did not hear from Cale. We did not hear from David Taylor. I mean, obviously Taylor was pretty distraught, just kind of walked off, and that was that. So I am curious to see what Taylor's future is. You know, I think that then kind of becomes the big story here. But obviously for Aaron Brooks, now it's like, okay, he's got a few months to get ready for Paris. Obviously, Zane Rutherford first has to go and qualify the weight in Istanbul. So yeah, there's a lot going on, and I think eventually, I hope we hear from Cale, but we did not hear from him this weekend.
And explain the Zane Rutherford qualification for everybody out there so they understand how it actually works for him.
Yeah, so you have six Olympic weight classes, which you have 10 in college, so the cut down from 10 to 6 is something that a lot of guys do not like. They voice concerns about it and kind of, hey, you know, why do you have to do it this way? But U.S., you have opportunities throughout the cycle to qualify your weight, meaning, like for Aaron Brooks, his example, the weight had been qualified through Worlds. So, like, he knew if he won, he was going to wrestle in Paris. Well, for Zane Rutherford, his weight class is one that has not been qualified yet. So he then has to go to Istanbul May, I believe, 9 through 12, has to finish in the top three there. And if he finishes among the top three, then he actually gets to compete in Paris. So it's this weird distinction where you're an Olympic trials champion, but yet you may not wrestle in the Olympics if the weight isn't qualified. Same situation with Spencer Lee from Iowa. He also has to go to Istanbul to qualify the weight. So the thing with Rutherford's weight class as well is the U.S. did not qualify that weight in 2020 either.
Right.
So that's kind of one of those, like, it's going to be an uphill climb for Zane, but he also spoke very much as it sounded like as if this was his last kind of shot at all of this as well, which was interesting.
Right. as somebody who's covered the Olympics, and you covered London in 2012, what's the experience like, and how did you have to dole out your time so you were able to get the best out of the experience?
It's crazy. I mean, it is like a caffeinated month where, you know, you're just kind of sprinting nonstop. And at the time, I just graduated from Penn State, and they had sent, there were five of us that Penn State sent over there as a partnership with the USOC, the U.S. Olympic Committee. Right. And so, I mean, every day, like, we were assigned specific beats, and wrestling was one of mine. So every day, it was like you were going somewhere different. And then, I mean, it was like, you just have to be well-versed, and you spend so much of the summer just prepping the different sports, and, okay, what are the storylines for handball, and what are the storylines for field hockey, and, you know, because everybody knows kind of the main storylines with swimming, with track and field, but when you start to get in the weeds on some of these other sports, I mean, it's like equestrian, rhythmic gymnastics. I had the triathlon. That was one of the ones that I was covering. So it is a lot, and you're just kind of going around the clock for a month. Like, you don't know what day of the week it is. It's kind of like one of those hectic football weeks, but just back to back to back to back. But it's the best. I mean, I would love to get the opportunity to cover another Olympics at some point in my career, because it is just the high stakes of it, the drama, the emotion, there's nothing like it. But yeah, you do. I mean, I was able to sneak in some kind of sightseeing stuff, but my sightseeing was going to other events, right? Like, people say, oh, how was London? You were there for a month. And I was like, yeah, I really didn't see anything. Like, I saw Buckingham Palace, but it was while watching beach volleyball that was happening next to it, you know? How was Hyde Park? Well, I was there for the triathlon, and that was cool, you know? So you experience a place, but not really, you know?
Oh, no, the people are like, so the Rose Bowl. Am I going, yeah, we're at the hotel, we did eat, and we covered, and Jack and I did the game, and then I left.
Yeah, oh, yeah, like, I think people think that, like, we do all this, like, sightseeing and all. I mean, same thing, Steve. I'm already looking at flights for Penn State at USC next year, and I'm like, oh, my gosh, how are we going to make this work?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's like, oh, hey, you went down, and I think it was what the – I did the Disney Classic this year for basketball. I was there. Okay. I got there on a Tuesday night. Okay, Wednesday, but there was practice. Thanksgiving was the game. I had a flight right after the game. I got to Detroit, did the game in Detroit, flew back on Saturday, did the game on Sunday, flew back. I was like, Disney? What are you talking about? To me, the Magic Kingdom.
You weren't hanging out with Mickey and Minnie, Steve.
Oh, the mouse was at the game. I mean, no.
Oh, there you go.
Oh, no, the mouse did the opening tip. And if you want to know why the mouse has a gigantic smile on his face all the time, because everybody is spending so much money, he is thrilled.
Except for you, because you didn't have any time to spend any money there.
I had no time to spend a dime. So the mouse wanted no part of me. Yeah, get out of here. We didn't spend any money here. Get out of here. Hey, Audrey. It's great coverage of the Olympic trials. Really appreciate the time, as always. It was terrific.
No problem. Thanks, Steve. Take care.
Audrey Snyder from The Athletic. You know, it's interesting. She brought up at the very beginning of that about how do you make this area outside of a football season a destination place to go to. It has been amazing, the run here in central Pennsylvania that we've had here. Blue-white game. Back on the 13th, right? You follow that up the next weekend with the Olympic trials that we just talked about. I mean, thousands coming in for the blue-white game. Thousands coming in for the Olympic trials. Then you follow that up with Luke Combs. They had 80,000 people in Beaver Stadium for Luke Combs. And then you follow that up with commencement weekend. Now, I will freely admit, I was coming off the golf course on Sunday. You know, chance to relax, hit a few, and there was nobody out at the golf course. It was great. I could go anywhere I wanted, whenever I wanted, and never once slowed down. So I'm done. Yeah, I finished up around 6:30 or so or something like that in the evening. I'm going to go home, get some dinner. And so I'm going by the Jordan Center, and I'm looking over like, where the heck? What are all these people doing here, right? And I realized This is Sunday night. This was not Friday night or Saturday. They still were having commencements. And they were finally, whatever commencement was done at the Jordan Center, then they were all pouring out. I'm looking at the Beaver Stadium parking lot's all filled up, everything like that. And then I think this weekend, I know it's Mother's Day weekend, but I believe they're having something called Beer Fest this weekend at Beaver Stadium. We'll have to check with Sue about that one. Now, this half hour is being brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket, imports, domestics, Michael Brews, the best selection of beer anywhere, wine coolers, water, soft drink, snacks. They roast their peanuts fresh and hot every day. Pickle bar led by the barrels and the dills, indeed second to none at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. Dennis Dodd, next half hour on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Okay.